section, when we talk about marriage, is going to be controversial. It's controversial among brethren, it's controversial about Christians around the world. Denominations talk about marriage, especially when it comes to problems in marriage and divorce. And so I wouldn't be surprised if people say, well, I don't agree with that, or I've never heard that. That's fine, okay? Because that's just normal. But we're not here for creed rehearsal. We're here for Bible study. And so we're going to look at it and just see what Paul has for us to say. I don't think it's difficult. I think it's really understandable. But yet, again, there'll be questions. And so here's going to be the rule for tonight. I've prepared this, worked through it, you know, extensively. And so I don't have time for comments tonight. I know that's going to be hard, all right?
So it's a sermon, not a class.
No, I will take questions. And if you're real witty and you know how to word your comment in a question, try it and we'll see how far you get, okay? All right, questions are great because questions are just really, I need more information. Objections that are formed as questions are fine because they're just saying, I need more information. And we're here to teach, not just to lecture and tell you what it means, all right? But there's a lot of material, and I want to get through it all, and so you can see and listen to what Paul has to say. And then if we have to come back next week and talk about it and discuss it, you know, in a open forum, fine, we'll do that. But let's just get the material out first. Is that okay? Okay, so we're going to do that. And when we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7, there's really going to be two sections we're going to look at. The first section is verse 1 through 16, and that's all we're going to look at this evening. And this section really has four sections in it, this part. And I want you to think of it as a filing cabinet with four drawers, because he's going to address four different scenarios or issues. The first one about married people. The second one would be unmarried people. The third one would be married people that have problems. And the fourth scenario are Christians married to non-Christians. All these are different scenarios. And while they all have the same theme of marriage, the issues and the answers are different. So you don't jump from drawer four to down to drawer three and try to combine the answers. Do you understand what I'm saying? So when Paul's done with drawer one, we're going to close it. Then when we talk about unhappily married Christians, that's drawer three, we'll pull it out and look at what Paul has to say. So they're different answers to different scenarios. They're connected by the general theme of marriage, yes, but they have different answers. Don't try to combine them all together. We'll just get confused, okay? That's how Paul does it. Now, he starts by saying, talking to the married, and we're going to see that each of these has a question embedded in it. Because look in verse 1. How does Paul begin? You can respond. What does he say? Now concerning the things about which you wrote. They wrote Paul a letter, and in that letter, they asked him questions. Now, we don't have the letter, but by looking at his answers, guess what we can do? We can figure out what the questions are, right? And so the first one is about married couples, and we're going to see is, can I say no sexually? So, wow, that's a good question. And then he's going to talk about the unmarried, and the question really there is, well, can I marry? Or should I stay single? Then the third one is, well, can I divorce? Because now we're talking about couples who are not happy, all right? And then the fourth one is a man or a woman who's married to a non-believer, and they are saying, should I divorce? That's really the question they're going to ask. Should I divorce? Okay? So we'll look at the first section here, and it's about the married couples. Now, when I say married, we're addressing Christian couples, but I think God's marriage law are universal for all people. There's nowhere in Scripture where you can say, here are laws for Christians or people that have a faith in God, and then here are marriage laws for all non-believers. It just doesn't happen. I mean, adultery's wrong for a Christian, and adultery's wrong for a non-Christian. We know murder and lying and stealing is wrong for Christians, and guess what? Murder, lying, and stealing is wrong for non-Christians as well. Now, they might not acknowledge the sovereignty of God in their life. They might reject the morality, but that doesn't mean they'll escape the judgment of God in those areas, right? Now, as Christians, we acknowledge that, and so we're trying to comply and submit the will to God. Question or comment?
Question.
All right, good.
Do you think they're asking these questions because they are coming out of the Gentile Hellenistic world and have so many?
That's a good question. That was a thinly good comment, though, actually. Yes, because Corinth was really a Gentile place. They had a saying, the Corinthians married to divorce and divorce only to get married. They were very corrupt in, as far as their morality. And so when people are coming out of this kind of society and coming to Christ, they got a lot of questions because divorce was rampant back then. Now, much like it is today, okay? So yes, that's a good question. Okay, and that's what is happening. So now the first one, Paul says, it is good, and we're going to come back to that statement, but it's good for a man not to touch a woman, i.e. don't get married. Why would you say that, Paul? We'll come back to that later, but just note it. He said it's good. But because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Now what he's saying here is because of temptation sexually, it's better that you marry than succumb to those temptations and fall under judgment. Now, this might cheapen marriage in your eyes, like, oh, you only get married so you can have sex? Well, that's a big part of it, all right? Sexual relationships are a blessing of being one flesh. And that's why God said it's not good for man to be alone. I'll make them help me. But here we're going to see the general rule of marriage. Because notice he says, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. And when I say the general rule of marriage, here it is. Any unmarried man and any unmarried woman can be joined together in marriage. That's the general rule. Now, when you have general rules, what do you always have with them? Exceptions, all right? When I say a general rule, it's not absolute. There are exceptions. Now, when we talk about God, it's impossible for God to lie. We see that in the Old Testament. Are there any exceptions to that? No, that's not a general rule, that's an absolute. But when it comes to marriage, and we're going to have the general rule of divorce, there are exceptions to it. So I'm just trying to give you the overview. Now, we'll see this from Scripture, because we see that in the very beginning, God said it's not good for man to be alone, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. I'll make a helper. So, and he caused a deep sleep, and he formed woman out of man's rib. And he said, for this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother, they shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become what? One flesh. That's not sexual, it's one flesh. They're one unit. They're like one person, even though they're two individuals. They're supposed to be one mind, one soul, one spirit, one emotion. And out of that, they get to enjoy the sexual union, but sex doesn't make the one flesh. One flesh allows sex to happen. Do you understand the difference? All right. There's no consummation of marriage in the Bible. That's a Catholic doctrine, and just throw it away out of your mind. All right. Does that make you understand what I'm saying? Now, so here you have a woman and man. They're one flesh. If you're one body, what happens if you sever the two apart? You kill the one flesh. So God meant it to be permanent for a lifetime. That was his design. Now, even though it's designed that way, does it always happen that way? No. All right? And so we'll see that. Let's give a definition of marriage. And we could expound on this and give you the background for it, but let me just give it to you, and we can talk about it more later. Marriage is a covenant relationship When I say a covenant, it's the Hebrew word berith, and it means an agreement, a solemn oath between two individuals. And it's solemn. You're binding yourself to this person. I take you as my wife, and I take you as my husband. And there are covenant terms. You will be faithful to each other. And it's between a man and a woman. There's a choice. They choose to be joined together. They're not forced to. Who does the joining? God does the joining, but he's joining the two together, not to him, but to each other. And that's how they become one flesh. So it's a covenant relationship. And so that's where Paul says, because of immoralities, get married. But now here is the question, well, do I have to engage sexually? You say, well, how do you get that question? Notice his answer in verse 4. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, also, the husband does not have authority over her own body, but the wife does. Now, when you say, what are you talking about? How do you know this is sex? Well, notice the next verse. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together against lest Satan tempt you because of the lack of self-control. So here, there must have been a question, maybe coming out of the heathen Gentile world where there's all this promiscuity, you know, should I engage in sexual activity with my husband when he wants to it, and vice versa? And what's the answer? Simply, yes. Now, we learned some things here. You don't deprive one another. That means withhold something which belongs to them. That's what the word deprive means. Because Satan is going to tempt you because of lack of control. So when we go back to this one here, the Catholics teach the only purpose for sex in a marriage is for procreation. That's why they would teach birth control is wrong. Because the only reason you have sex is to have a father, a child. Well, Paul is going to shoot that right down, didn't he? He's saying, don't deprive each other except for just a little while. And then as soon as that time's up, come back together. He's acknowledging that the sexual expression between a husband and wife is one of the blessings that we have in marriage for intimacy, and you should enjoy it, and the last thing you should do is deprive it of one another. Now, does that happen in marriages? Do they use sex as a tool, as a wedge, or as a threat, or as leverage, or as punishment? Now, you say, well, that's what wives do. No, husbands will do it as well because it goes both ways. The husband doesn't have authority over his body, and the wife doesn't have authority over her body. It's the others. You say, well, I never saw it that way. Well, that's what Paul's arguing. You're one flesh, and it's supposed to be enjoyed with each other. Now, let me just talk to the men real quick. If you go home and say, woman, I heard Jack real plain and clear, and I hope you heard him too. You cannot say no because you have no authority of your body. Now, if you do that and you demand, and yet you don't love her as your own self, and you don't nurture and cherish her and treat her like a queen, she will say yes because of her faithfulness to God, but she will feel like dirt. She'll feel like used, and she'll feel like a prostitute. Now, is that what you want for a wife? Do you understand what I'm saying? That's why God says, in that marriage, you love and cherish her as Christ loved the church. You nurture her as your own body. You make her feel like a queen. And when you do that, she'll be willing and want to. It'll be intimacy and not just sex, right? And likewise, women, same way. If you say, well, I will this because I have to, and you just chide your husband, and you treat him like the child you think he is, and you just always demean him and run him down, and you say, well, yeah, here I am, you're not fulfilling this either. He says, respect your husband. Submit to him. And make him the king of your life. And when you do that, he'll love you like you were supposed to. And you're going to have a beautiful relationship sexually that God intended. It's the meeting of these two minds and emotions and spirits and bodies. But it starts right here. Okay? So, sermon over. Okay? But it's very important we understand the greater context. All right. Any questions about that? Okay, good. The only exception to this rule is right here. You could have a sexual fast. I didn't put that up there as a sexual fast, but it is a fast by mutual consent. Notice what it says. You only do it by agreement, and it's for what? A period of time. Now, how long is that time? You agree upon it mutually. All right? It's not once that, hey, for the next 3 months, sorry, I'm on a fast. You say, well, no, I didn't agree to that. No, it's mutual. It's for a period of time. And what is the specific purpose for this sexual fast? What does it say?
Prayer.
Does it say to work? Does it say to sleep? Does it say to catch up on your reading? No, what's the only reason you take a fast? For purpose of prayer. There's something about fasting from food, and here in this case, sex, that you're devoting yourself totally to God in prayer, to connect more closely. And it's appropriate. But as soon as that period of time is over, he says, come together again, right? Come together. Why? What's the reason? Satan doesn't tempt you. This is where we have to, as individuals, realize that sexual urges are God-given to us. They're built into us by God himself. They're in our DNA. We're hardwired for them. Some people more than others. So sex is not dirty. It's not to be looked upon as someone's wrong with that person because they have a large libido. Here Paul's acknowledging, you do it for a short while, then come back together because Satan's there going to tempt you. Because as those sexual urges build, he's going to bring around some person and it's going to catch your eye. And so sometimes a spouse can set up their spouse for failure by denying them, you know, this sexual union. Do you understand what he's saying? And I know the responsibility falls upon the individual, but there's two that are in this game together. Does that make sense? And it's because of the lack of what? Self-control. I need a whiteboard, maybe, if you would. All right, any questions about that first cabinet we pulled out? Paul says to fulfill your duty to one another sexually. Your mate has authority over your body. Stop depriving except for a period of prayer. He says, I'm saying this by concession command. I wish you were as myself. What does that mean, as myself? Does anyone know? Paul was single. So this is the second time he said it's good not to touch a woman. Now he's saying, I wish you were like me. Now we're going to explain that in a second. But I just want you to be mindful of that. But because not everyone has that gift, what gift do you think he's talking about?
Self-control,
exactly. Some people can master those urges and those desires and live a life without acting on them. Not many people. And Paul acknowledges that. Everyone has his own gift of God, one in this manner, another in that. So because not everyone has that type of self-control, notice what he says now to the unmarried. We're now closed the first drawer and we're open the second drawer. You with me? So the unmarried are going to say, well, what about us? Should we marry or not? Notice what he says in verse 8. I say to the unmarried and to the widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I. What does that mean?
Unmarried.
But if they don't have self-control, let them marry, for it's better to marry than to burn. Now, some Bibles say burn with passion, but that's not in the original language. The word burn means just what it means, to burn, to be on fire. Some say it's in judgment because you fall to immorality. Some say it is burning with just desires all the time. Either way, you're in the same place, right? He says it's better if you don't have self-control to marry than to burn, either with desires constantly or in judgment because you end up in sin. So there's what he's saying. Now he's invoking the general rule of marriage. What is that rule? What was the general rule of marriage? Any unmarried person can marry another unmarried person. It's okay. There's nothing that makes you more spiritual or more righteous than by staying single than getting married. There's nothing about that. And likewise, it's true. Sometimes people think, man, I'm just not a complete person because I'm not married. And I got to be married to be a righteous or complete person. Is Paul arguing that? What's he saying? I wish you were like me, okay? And that means single or unmarried. But here is the general rule for the unmarried. I want you to notice there's a distinction between the word unmarried and widows. See that? Well, you say, well, a widow is unmarried, but Paul doesn't put them in the same group, does he? He calls them two different sorts of groups of people. So what is a widow? Well, first of all, you have this man married to a woman. The man dies, and that means death separates that marriage covenant. Remember we said marriage is a covenant between a man and a woman, and they become one flesh. And listen very carefully. This is the only natural end to a marriage. The only natural. It's death. It's been appointed for man to die once, and since God intended marriage to be a lifetime, the only natural conclusion to a marriage is death of one of the spouses. Because by death, the marriage bond is broken. That's given to us in the end of the chapter, verse 39 and 40. It's also given to us in Romans chapter 7, that a woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if he dies, she's free. The marriage covenant is now over, and she is an unmarried person and free to marry. Right? But he doesn't call her an unmarried person. What does he call her? A widow. That's interesting. So what's an unmarried person? Paul says this widow, though, if you don't have self-control, I'd rather you get married. 1 Timothy 5, he says the same thing. Younger women, get married. Just get married. Have children. But there is a general rule. Paul can either forbid marriage, nor can he command it. Now, why would I say that? He can't tell you you can't get married, and he can't force you to get married. It's your liberty, your choice. Y'all comfortable with that? Yes, Paul. Sure.
Is this concerning widowers too?
Thank you. All right. We could make this woman, the man dying, or the woman dying instead, so it'd be a widower. That's right. Okay? It goes either way. Yes.
Well, this is sort of a comment or a question. If you think about it, every married couple, one of them is going to be a widow, unless they both die at exactly the same moment.
See, we let him get away with that.
One of them is going to be unmarried.
What's your question?
is that correct?
Okay, yeah, there you go. That's true. He brings up a good question that everyone will become a widow or widower someday unless you both die together. Isn't that true? Yeah.
So is it more that the covenant is completed rather than broken? I mean, would it be?
It comes to a natural end.
Right.
Yeah. And every other, you know, and that's what I'm saying, natural end,
yeah.
Because they're premature ends to the covenant. And we'll talk about one of them, but we don't have time to talk about all of them. There's premature ends to the covenant of marriage. God did not attend them, but they break it nonetheless. It always involves sin, but it does break the covenant. It's premature. This is the only natural end to a marriage. Okay? See the difference? All right. Huh?
Successfully completed.
Right. Well, yeah. And you could say in theory that this isn't even a natural end, because when God said they'll become one flesh, they were intended to live forever. They had not eaten of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil yet. But because of that, they did. Death did enter in the picture, and death is the only natural end. That's why I say that. Okay? So, the unmarried. He says they're free to marry. That's the general rule of marriage. Who is the unmarried? Down in verse... Look in verse... 34. What do you see there? That's going to help us in this discussion. What do you see? Two things contrasted with each other. The what? The unmarried and the virgin. Well, I thought the unmarried would be the virgin. Now, a virgin is going to be defined. It's in your list. Anyone that's never had sex or has never been married, right? Okay. Well, here it says you have the unmarried and the virgin. So now we're left with a different, they're not widows, they're not virgins. Who would the unmarried be? The word comes from the word marriage, gamos, and it has an A in front of it. Like a theist, then you have an A, negates it, atheist. These are people that not necessarily were never married, but they were married and now not married. They're unmarried. So who would that be? Divorced. Huh? Well, not necessarily virgins, because they're put in another classification. It would be people that are not married that previously were. It seems to be the suggestion. And they say, well, okay, where are you going to go with that? Well, let's let Paul just take us there, okay? Notice what he says then in the next verse. He's going back to this idea that it's good for them to not touch a woman. Remember we read that in verse 1? Now he says, verse 7, I wish all men were as myself. And verse 8, it's good for them to remain as I, but if they don't have self-control. Let's try to explain that real quickly. Paul, throughout this chapter, lists several things that give us a clue of why he's saying that. He says in verse 8, it's good for them to remain as I. Verse 20, let each man remain the condition which he's called. Here is the one in verse 26 you want to notice. I think that is good in view of the present distress, that is good for a man to remain as he is. In other words, single. Our best understanding, something was going on at this time, some type of persecution, whether physically or even financially, that you would wish that you were not married rather than see your family or your spouse suffer because you can't feed them or maybe they're being persecuted and put in prison. He goes on to say the person's married, their interests are divided. They're more concerned about their spouse than the Lord. And he said, I want you to be undistracted because Satan is using this persecution to get you to deny Christ. We had seven women in Coeur d'Alene when I was worshiping there that were married to non-believers. Seven. It's quite a lot. And I think I've told you this before. When we were left there, you know how many had denied the faith because of their husbands drew them away? Six out of the seven. And that's what Paul's addressing. This was in good times. When you throw a persecution on it, a present distress, it's going to cause people sometimes to compromise. He says, yeah, you can get married, but you're going to have what? Trouble, he says. Now, sometimes people take this verse out of context. Yeah, you want to get married? You're asking for trouble. That's not what Paul's saying. You're going to have trouble in view of this present distress, whatever it was. Okay, do you understand? Marriage is a blessing. It's not to be troublesome, but because of the environment in which they were living, he's saying, you ought to stay single. Time has been shortened. The form of this world is passing away, and I want you to be free from concern, and I'm saying this for your own benefit. That's why Paul is saying, I wish you'd stay like me. But if you can't control it, if you have no self-control, go ahead and get married. See what he's saying? All right, so it's their choice. Again, he can't forbid marriage. He doesn't command it. It's your Christian liberty if you are unmarried or a widow or a virgin. All right? So in verse 8 then, he says, I give my opinion to someone that's trustworthy. Is Paul a trustworthy witness? Now, I like this. He says it's an opinion. Now, what does that tell you? It's not binding. You don't have to follow it. He's just speaking his opinion. Now, when Paul doesn't preface a statement with, this is my opinion, what is he giving you? Thus saith the Lord. It's a command. And that's important because the verses that are coming up pretty soon. So he says, in view of the present stress, I think I know what I'm talking about. So now let's shut that drawer. We got these single people married. Some chose not to get married because they have self-control. But now let's pull out the drawer. We got a couple, a man and a wife, and they're having problems in their marriage. Maybe sexually, financially, I don't know what it is. But the question is, can I divorce? Because in that day, they had what we call no-fault divorce. You didn't have to have cause. You could divorce for any reason whatsoever. And people were known to divorce in order to marry someone else. So you have to understand. Some people divorce because they just can't stand each other anymore. Some people would divorce because they have their eye on someone else, and to go take them would be adultery, and I don't want to be guilty of that, so I'll divorce you first, then go take that person. Because now I'm married, and it's not adultery. Now Paul's going to take that one up. So the question is, can I divorce for any cause? That's really what's being asked here. So in verse 10 and 11, just two verses, we're pulling out the third drawer. To the married, I give instruction. This is very important. Not I, but who? Does that mean Paul has no authority in this matter? What's he saying? Why do you say not I, but the Lord? It's not my opinion. What?
He's no longer talking about his opinion.
All right. But why does he say, why couldn't he say, I'm telling you? He could say that, right? But he already told him in chapter 5, in the name of Jesus Christ, when I'm with you in spirit, you withdraw from this man. He gave a command. In chapter 1, verse 10, he said, in the name of Christ, be no divisions among you. He spoke by his authority given to him as apostle of Jesus Christ. Yes. All right, and you're all really close. The answer is this, JC.
If God said something specifically addressing this situation, rather than
okay. All right.
The Old Testament said, I divorce. He didn't say anything wishy-washy.
All right, that's even going to be closer. I want you to, well, I'm going to read it again, but I'm going to see the next one. He says, to the married, I give instructions, not I, but the Lord. Now notice verse 12. To the rest, this is drawer number 4. I say, not the Lord. Whoa, is Paul stepping out on his own and speaking by his own initiative now? Why does he say, not I, but the Lord, but later, not the Lord, but me? And. Okay.
That's what he's referring to. And then when he closes that door and opens up another, it's going to be an issue that wasn't there when Jesus was on the earth.
All right.
It'll be something that never
happened. All right. When he says, I'm giving you instructions, he's saying, really, it's not me. You've already heard this before. It's already been taught. I'm just repeating it to you because the Lord already spoke about it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, when he gets to the next scenario, I'm going to give you new instruction that's never been taught before. That's why it's not the Lord, but me. I'm speaking for the Lord, but you've not heard this one before. Who said oh? All right, good. Hang on to that oh, okay? Is this a comment or a question? All right. I have to stick by my rules, all right? Here is instruction. The wife should not leave her husband and skip the parental thing, and the husband should not divorce his wife. The word leave there is charizo, and it's the word technically it's used for divorce, okay? And it goes both ways. The husband should not divorce his wife. In the old Israel, the men had the right to divorce their wives. Women did not have a right to initiate a divorce. By the Second Temple period and finally up into the time of Christ, especially in the Gentile world, women were divorcing as much as men were. So that's why it goes both ways here. But Paul says, what? Don't. Now, I hate the translation leave. That's why in your definitions, you see the word leave. It actually is the word for divorce. And he uses that here, divorce. You're separating yourself. Now, he says don't, but here's this parenthetical statement. If she does leave, now, when Paul says the Lord said don't and you do, have you sinned? Everyone say yes. When you do what the Lord said not to do, you have sinned. He says don't. But sometimes people do what they're not supposed to do. Then they ask, now what shall I do? Does that make sense? Like we might tell our kids, you can have the car, but don't you drink while you're driving. Do I want them drinking at all? No. And if you do drink, make sure you don't drive. Am I giving them permission to drive or drink? No. But I'm saying if you mess up and get drunk, the last thing you better do is double your problems by what? Driving. That's what he's saying here. Don't, but if you do, you got two options. Remain unmarried or be reconciled. So let's look at it. Christ has already spoke about this matter. Matthew 5, Matthew 19, Mark 10, and Luke 16. We'll look at one in Luke 16. Here's the general rule of divorce. Now remember, general rules always have what? An exception. The exception is not dealt with in this verse at all. So we're not even going to with exception. We're just going to give the general rule, okay? So let's look at Luke 16, verse 18, where Jesus spoke. And there's no doubt they had these texts and they were familiar with what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount here. And Jesus is addressing this attitude, I can divorce for any cause because I want this new woman. It'll be adultery, so I'll divorce my wife and just get married again. What does Jesus say in Luke 16, verse 18? Everybody, everyone, who does that exclude? Everyone who divorces his wife and marries commits adultery. Now, if you take that on face value, can anyone divorce for any cause? But there's an exception to this, right? He's just not addressing it. Why aren't we addressing the exception? You can't understand the exception unless you understand the rule. The rule of divorce is what? Don't. Period. Don't. Now, there's an exception, but you got to understand the rule. Don't. Jesus said, what God has joined together, let no man separate. That's the word charizo, which is being used by here. Don't leave, or charizo, separate from your husband. So they're saying the same thing. Because if you do and marry another, you're committing adultery. And the one who marries the one you put away, they're also what? Committing adultery. That's the same statements. These are equivalents we'll show. Go ahead, Brian.
Is the husband and wife interchangeable in Luke 16, 18?
Yes.
So you can put whoever divorces his
yes.
their husband and marries another.
Yes. But usually it's going to be initiated by the man.
Right.
That's right. So Paul said, don't leave. Jesus said, don't separate. Same word in both of them. Don't. That's the rule of divorce. Now, what God has joined together, let no man separate. That's what Jesus said. The word separate is the word charizo. God said, don't. Don't. Well, what if you do? He says, if you divorce your wife and you marry this other way, it's adultery. Same way, if the woman marries another man, it's adultery. So the question is, why? Why is that the case? Because we're talking about divorce with no cause. What's the reason for the divorce? I want this other woman and I'm tired of you. Or I just don't like you anymore. Whatever it is, there's just no cause. Now, the only cause we're going to see that Jesus mentioned is fornication. And so, he marries another person, and Paul says, Jesus said it's adultery, either side, right? And the question is, why? Well, Paul says, don't divorce, but if you do, remain unmarried. Why? Because if you marry someone else after getting rid of your man, what have you committed? Remain unmarried. You were married, but because this legal piece of paper, you're now regarded as unmarried. But what if I get tired and I get lonely and I want to have sex again? I want to have companionship. What's option B? What's option B? Reconcile to who? Whoa, you still have a husband. I thought I divorced him. No, you divorced him legally, but he's still your husband because there was never any underlying cause to initiate the divorce. See, the paper does not sever the relationship. It never does. Man sees it that way. It's on the underlying cause that will break the relationship. Death, or Jesus is going to say fornication, and Paul's going to give a third one. But the paper does not end the relationship. The paper is a response to another cause that broke it. You see what I'm saying? And in this case, there was no underlying cause. Okay? So when we look at this, here's why it's adultery. Adultery is unlawful intercourse with someone other than your spouse, right? Here's what's very important. You've got to be married in order to commit adultery. Now, why would I say that? A young guy and a young girl, they're neither are married, they have sex. What do we call that? We don't call it adultery. It's just what? Fornication. Somebody has to be married for it to be adultery. So let's look at our chart. Paul says, you divorce your husband, you go out and marry someone else. Or Jesus said, he says, that's adultery. Why? Why? You're still married. You're still married. You've got a legal piece of paper, but the marriage bond has never been broken. You're still married. Wow, that stunned people in Jesus' day. That stunned them. His disciples said, well, that's the case. We shouldn't even get married. He said, not everyone can say that. Not everyone has self-control. But if you get married, it's for permanent. Now, there will be an exception, but we're not dealing with exception. Now, do you understand that, what we're seeing here? These two people are still bound. That's why he says, remain unmarried or else be reconciled. That's hard. But no, it's not. It was an oath. You made an oath before God and to that person. And God wants you to honor it. And you can.
So how does that relate to verse 15 where Paul tells them the unbeliever departs, but then depart?
All right. Okay, I have 1 minute to introduce it, and next week we'll finish it. But what we've learned so far, marriage is supposed to be a lifetime. Divorce as a general rule is wrong. Obtaining the proper work doesn't break the marriage covenant, and the couple that divorces are still bound in marriage. For either to remarry is to commit a goal. Either. Because what? They're both still bound. They're both. All right. So, we'll introduce this, then I'm done. I know. Give me 1 minute. 1 minute. He says, I say not the Lord. And he's going to give a whole new scenario. And he's going to say, don't send divorce, but if they leave, let them leave. So your question is, why would he contradict himself? Because we've closed drawer number 3. Now we're opening door number 4. This is a new scenario that has never existed before. Jesus never spoke about it because it's a condition that never existed. Paul's giving the information about this scenario, this marriage circumstance, for the very first time. And you have to come back next week and see what it is. All right. That means you have to stay a whole nother week. All right. Thank you.